On this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, it's a very unbalanced and narrative game of Song of Blades and Heroes. Welcome back to the podcast, Robert.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be back.
I always enjoy the games we get to play. That sounds hellish, doesn't it? I always enjoy when we get together to do tabletop miniature wargaming.
Yeah, you know, dress it up how you like, but I'm here for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so we haven't played this game in a while. It's Song of Blades and Heroes. We usually play Rangers of Shadowdeep, but you'll be pleased to know there's a few different caveats here. If you look on the table in front of us that I've set up, you'll see a few familiar faces. We've got Vinny, we've got now grandson of Goatsy, you'll see Russell Sprout, you'll see Grub, you'll see Fungus, you'll see Gunter, we have Harold and Boris, and we've got a few new characters here. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to get you to take charge of this defensive force that defend the village. They're heavily outnumbered and outarmed, and it's basically an experiment in, well, not an experiment, it's an example of how you don't really need balance, because you probably will lose this, or, you know, you'll certainly suffer the most casualties. But I think there's a narrative aspect to something like this. Like, it's not a game of chess, is it? It's storytelling in a lot of sense. So it's just seeing, like, you know, how well you could defend and some of the wee good moments you might be able to get out of it.
Yeah.
So some new characters as well lining up here. Let me talk you through them. We've got some of these kids who have featured irregularly in our games before. So we've got Adam with his apple, and that's going to count as a range weapon. Stew Pot is the kid with the pot on his head. We have Rick with his big hard stick. You knew I was going to say stick there, didn't you?
I hoped.
And this guy here, this big stone rocky guy, his name literally is Rocky. Claire with the bears there. See, this wee guy, he's like a crow. He's a crow with like a bonnet and a waistcoat and a dagger. I've called him Beaky Blinder.
Oh, that's... I tried to think what I might call him, and all of those dreams are in ashes, because that's the winner.
We have the wee guy with the fists here. What is it? A bare knuckle Bob. I couldn't really think of anything humorous for him. The jester, though, I've called him Baffies.
Of course.
Of that? The kid with the ball, Paul with the ball. And on the flank here, we have Doug. Because he's a wolf, but we'll call him a big dog. Wolves and dogs, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing, really. So we have that force lined up protecting a village. We've got a couple of houses there behind them. We've got a well and a couple of, what would you call these? Like, it's a 2D terrain. It's sort of like dugouts or bunkers, isn't it?
Yeah. What are they? They're just like, they don't go anywhere when you go down into them.
I see them as like
trenches.
They've kind of dug them because they could then get behind them and shoot or fire magic or stuff like that. So if you look at the way like I've set you up, and feel free to move it around if you want, but like we've got Vinny on one flank and we've got Doug on the other, so that's a bit of mobility. And then beside them both, grandson of Goatsy and Boris, who are pretty similar, although grandson of Goatsy will of course die because that's just his lineage. Behind the bunker here, Adam with his apple and Russell Sprout, one of them is able to use a range weapon with his apples. He's going to throw them.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Sprout's a magic user, so he could, you know, he's essentially a range character as well. Same over here behind that bunker. Jester's Baffies. He's going to have the capability to do magic, whereas Paul's going to be able to kick his ball and use that as a range weapon. In the center here, right at the front, Gunter and Rocky, that's a bit of really heavy muscle for you, you know, if you want to try and get weighted in early.
Yeah.
Beside them as well, we have the two leaders, Harold and Grub, and they are backed up by Stew Pot and Beaky Blinder, respectively. Behind them there as well, we've got a bit more range. Maybe, in fact, you will want to get them forward, these guys here. We've got Orla, remember her from Blood Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Rick with the big stick and Claire with the bear. They're two magic users plus an archer. Maybe you will want to get them forward a wee bit to try and get a couple of early shots away. And at the back there, Fungus, no real skills at all. Although he can poison, you know, if he was to win a fight, which he won't, he could poison his opponent. And Bare Knuckle Bob as well, not really much chance for him to do any damage. But this is the purpose of that. It's you know, sometimes you will get those wee narrative moments and we'll just kind of see what happens with it.
Oh, I mean, we could go with the classic archery tactics of having them up front, fire their shots and then bolt.
Yeah,
so to speak, back
quite
off.
Literally. So on my side, what we've got over here, an invading force, a chaos force, led by this big, huge guy here, Aemon the Daemon.
Nice.
And he's basically invincible. But again, because this is a narrative game, I'm not just going to get waded in with him, because I could essentially just play him and probably win. So I'm not going to utilize him too early. Beside him here, we've got a wee mob of Chaos Marauders. So they're just your sort of frenzied Raj boys that want to get torn in. In the woods over here, bunch of beastmen. I suppose it'd be a herd of beastmen. That'd be the collective noun, wouldn't it?
Aye.
And over on the left flank looking forward here, a gang of Chaos Warriors as well. So, you know, obviously, like, there's a lot more. You've got individually, barring Aemon the Daemon, you've got individually the most powerful characters. I'd say, like, it's sort of a 9-9 split or an 8-8 split. I can't, how many characters are actually there? 19?
19 on this side, yeah, on my side.
Aye, so it's sort of, I know you can't get 50-50, but almost a half split on, like, capable characters and not so capable characters.
All right, aye.
So I was thinking, as a victory condition, we could just see what the time frame of the game is looking like as we get playing it. And if I was to kill over half your characters, that would sort of be considered a victory for me. Whereas if you were able to keep over half of your characters on the table, I would say that that's pretty much a victory for you. You know, you can frame these narrative things in all sorts of ways, can't you? Like, there's reinforcements and it's just a case of holding out until they arrive, etc., etc.
Under siege.
So, looking forward to returning to this game. I've spoke about it on the show a lot. It's and we've played through it as well. It's definitely not as complex. Not that Rangers of Shadowdeep's complex at all, but it's a really simple game. But I have been itching to kind of play it again for a while because it's just a nice, easy-going game as well. Like, you don't really have to think at all about the game. You're just thinking about what you're doing on the table. So, do you remember playing it before?
Yeah, definitely. A wee while ago now, but yeah, absolutely.
I think it was literally the first game we played for the podcast.
Yeah.
So
I've still got my copy of the book.
Yeah.
Which I have not looked at recently.
In your bathroom, you sit on the toilet with it.
Yeah.
Okay, then it's time to dive in, I suppose, and maybe do a wee half-time report and see how we're getting on.
Yeah, for sure. As Rick Sanchez once said, I'm ready to roll those dice.
So, Robert, the sun shines, streams, I should say, through the window, but it doesn't stream or shine for your dice rolling, does it? Jesus Christ.
Funnily enough, the angle right now of the sun is that it is bathing all of your models in sunlight and mine are in the dark. And
yeah,
that could not be a better metaphor for how the roles have gone.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen few instances like it. Like, I can't not roll fives and sixes, and you basically can't roll above two.
Yeah.
You've had a few opportunities. So just to describe to the listener what's happening, now my right flank, which is the Beastmen and the Marauders to an extent, have broke through your lines. They have knocked over Doug, they've knocked over Boris. You've even tried to activate them to get them back on their feet, but that wasn't happening, was it, naturally?
Yeah, like, I reckon easily 80-90% of my rolls have either failed or... Yeah, in fact, 100% of my rolls have either failed or led to not winning a fight, basically.
So your one wee moment of success, I think your only, your single only moment of success was Paul with the ball. He kicked his wee football right off a beastman's head and knocked him over. So that beastman's still lying there. But you've subsequently, like, Harold's had a shot at him with his crossbow. The beastman's literally lying in front of him, but he's still not managed to do any damage, has he?
I have temporarily inconvenienced one of your models, and that's all I've managed out of 19 models in 2 rounds.
Mind you, we say that, I'm forgetting, I'm looking there at the big marauder with the banner. Orla knocked him over as well.
Oh, that's so right, aye, yeah. He's
currently picking an arrow out his bum cheek, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I will say he's literally got 5 of his pals right behind him. So it's not like he's down on the ground and going to get picked off and, like, you know, he'll be okay.
Yeah, he probably will be. I have also made a couple of advancements with my Chaos Warriors on the left flank. And you have had Grub and a couple of the, well, Russell Sprout trying to do his magic. That's been absolutely shite. Grub, despite having a good bonus there, he took a shot at one of the Marauders. So you had a +1 for the good shot modifier. And I had -1 because you rolled 2, you activated twice, so you were doing a aimed attack.
Yeah.
So even though I went to -1 and you went to +2, you still didn't do anything. So it's just, that just sums up how it's sort of going for you so far, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. You can have all the pressure in the game, you know, in football, and then you get a penalty, but you can't actually put it in the net, then, you know, what's it all about?
I mean, I'll say one thing, nobody has died yet, but this is a classic quirk of this game, is that death, models die and it's not common. Like,
yeah,
people get knocked over and pushed a lot, but to actually kill someone takes a bit of something special. So that's a positive for you. You've not actually lost anyone yet.
Yeah, that's right. It's just some of them have not even moved yet because they've failed to activate both times. So it's like they're dead, but
they might, standing up,
might come to life. Yeah, aye, because like you've got a, it's not like they have health as such that can be worn down over time. It's all or nothing in the actual incidents of the battle. So we'll see. Maybe once they actually come together, which is going to be very soon, and actually meet face to face, and then start ganging up for bonuses, that's when we're going to actually see people dying.
Yeah, well, it's going on to my turn now, so I'm fairly certain there'll be some bloodshed coming up. And I don't think it'll be coming from any of my guys.
Yeah, well, as someone who knows a little bit about statistics, I'm really optimistic that it's going to go the other way now, because it absolutely has to.
Or these dice are loaded.
Or that, yeah.
If we swapped our dice right now, that it would just continue.
Yeah, like if you're in the wrong lane and all the traffic in the other lane's moving, and eventually you're like, I'm going to go in that lane, and then, of course, that lane stops and the lane you were in starts to move. So no, I'll stick with my dice.
So Robert, how are things going for you now?
There were a couple of successes when we first went back to it for the second half. Quickly outweighed by a massive run of bad luck. Again, it's really been quite incredible. But you know, that's how it works. That's chance for you and luck. It's not going to be even all the time. You know, like, you're going to have stretches of what looks like almost incredible bad luck, and that's exactly what's happened. Which has been interesting to see, and interesting to see how the rules can play out, like gruesome deaths making people run off the map and stuff like that. It's almost certainly insurmountable now for my guys to do anything here.
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be, but I didn't quite expect you to roll as badly and me to roll as well as what's happened. Like, it has been totally night and day with the dice. Yeah, interesting, you talked about running off the table. So what I'm noticing, and I've noticed this before on Song of Blades and Heroes, and I've mentioned it before today, is it's actually very hard to kill someone just, yeah, you know, on that, when we're both like standing up and fighting. So what you really need to do if you want to kill someone is to knock them over, which is a lot easier than killing them. And then it's on that follow-up. And I suppose that, you know, that's probably, not that I've ever been in a battle of this style, or indeed any battle in my life, but you know, I'd imagine like on the killing fields, it's like knock the guy over, give them a stab. It probably is more that than just this one big killing blow.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you need to do to kill folks. And then one of the other things that I didn't really consider it when setting up the table, but I had a lot of, I mean, I've got a lot of guys going down the flank, so a lot of beastmen, or had a lot of beastmen on the right-hand side. And what happened there, one of them had been knocked over, and then I think Harold shot him, and because he scored so high, he scored a gruesome kill. The guy, I think, because you're lying on the ground anyway, it is a gruesome kill. So there was a morale check had to take place amongst these beastmen, and like three of them, because they were right next to the table, they ran off the table, and that was it. So, you know, on the other side as well, we've got the Chaos Warriors going in there, and a similar thing had happened with a gruesome kill, and Vinny the Vulture just flew away. He'd had enough. And then one happened in the middle too, so you actually nearly lost Count Gunther, but because he's only a short move, that prevented him from running away, basically. So your wee assassin, Beaky Blinder, he killed someone, and he's got because he's got that assassin trait, he only has to win by one to kill somebody. But then he's also got the greedy trait, which means he stays and loots the corpse afterwards.
Yeah.
But because he then failed his morale when that gruesome kill happened, he ran away. So at least he's free to do what he wants to do now. But it's gone pretty badly for you. That said, there's four or five of my guys off the table. You have lost Fungus. He got killed. Doug got killed. Claire with the bear got killed. And no surprise to anyone, grandson of Goatsy, just like his dad, just like his granddad, he's pushing up the daisies now. So the Goatsy family continues to curse us every time we put one of the offspring on the table, doesn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's funny how the game is set up in such a way that it only takes a couple of the die to align themselves in such a way that leads to a massive problem. Like, I think you've lost more people to running off the board than you have to actually dying in combat, for instance.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like I say, it's hard to kill someone. You need to knock them down and follow up, really.
Yeah. Whereas the quality roll for whether or not your model runs in fear, if you've got three failures, which is easy, say you've got three trolls or whatever, and they've got a quality of four, so it's quite, you know, it's 66% chance they're going to fail three times.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're vaulting across the map and away.
Yeah.
So that's really, you know, I'm glad Rocky, my big man there, I'm glad he's in the middle of the map, because if he craps it and runs, he's gone.
Yeah, aye. That said, I wonder, this is minutiae, but because he's got the slow trait, he could only move once per activation. So I wonder if there's a thing there where even if he failed three times, he couldn't actually physically make it to the edge of the table in that time.
Yeah. That would make sense, because like if I use all my actions and then you scare me and then suddenly I've got another three actions to run away.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, does it?
Yeah.
And there have been a couple of wee times where we've overruled something as well, because again, this is narrative. It's not about me winning, which I will. You know, it's more the story. It's more how could these guys hold out. So there were a couple of wee mistakes and stuff where if this was a tournament, then I'd have just said, no, I'm having that. Whereas that's not why we're doing this, is it? So
yeah, but it's like the Battle of Thermopylae or the Alamo. And it's like, yeah, we're going to lose this, but we're going to play it out. And it's like, wait. Why have my guys all got feather dusters? It's like, okay, we're going to lose, but for goodness sake.
I have still not, I have moved Eamon the Daemon, but he's not done anything yet.
Maybe?
Yeah, he's been laughing. I noticed that when the guys around him on my side had to take morale checks, they all passed it, and that's probably because he's just standing behind them and he's so terrifying that...
they're not worried.
Yeah, so, aye, let's get back to it then and finish it off. Our question of the month for April 2024 is, have you ever tried to convince a 40k or Age of Sigmar player to play a non-GW miniatures game? If so, what was the response? What game did you play? And crucially, did they enjoy it? I'd love to hear about your own experiences on this front, and you could record your audio feedback by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now, back to the show.
I've still got optimism.
So that's that then. We've decided to call it a day, haven't we? How did it pan out in the end?
Overwhelming defeat for me. A couple of successes where a gruesome kill sent a couple of you guys off the board again. But even my successes in at least activating and then getting up there and then knocking a guy down and then getting a friend to come in ended in defeat just because the rolls just weren't there. Like, I would roll for the killing blow a 2, you roll a 4, and then that was it.
Aye, there was an interesting wee bit at the end there, like the couple of kids that were fighting the Beastmen and they managed to team up on him, knock him over. Orla stepped in and shot him. Because he's lying down, it's a gruesome kill, and that was like 2 or 3 Beastmen fled. So you actually removed 10 of my guys for the table, which is like, your rolling was so bad that that's actually pretty decent that you've managed to do that.
Yeah.
And then there was a chance to really clear things up, because you'd managed, like, Big Rocky, he's a big guy made of rock, and he genuinely must have been knocked down
3 times, at least 4 times,
yeah. So he's back on his feet again, actually gets to make his first attack, knocks a Beastman down. Harold steps up to give him a hand. So at that point, he's it's so weighted in his favour. If he just kills that Beastman, there's a whole group of marauders around him that would have to do morale checks, and you could potentially have them off the table. And suddenly, like, it's, I mean, you're still not going to win, but it would have been like really clear at that point.
Yeah.
Almost nobody on my right flank at all, but you fail it, and then, you know, that's pretty much it, isn't it? Like, that was the chance, wasn't it? So.
And even then I was like, well, look, I've still got a chance here with Beaky Blinder. I rolled 3 die, which is pretty bold, and thought, right, come on, if I can at least just get this guy killed, because he's got the assassin, then everybody will bolt then, because all I had to do was win to...
Yeah, win by 1 point.
Yeah, to kill him. And then, yeah, 2 failures, 50-50 chance, right, for each die, and I still had 2 failures, and then, but I still had 1 success, so I was still able to have an attack. I lost that, and I actually died myself, which then caused... gruesome death for everybody else.
Aye,
you got 10 overall and I got like 4.
Yeah.
So even with me throwing everything into that last roll, I still ended up like you had 2.5 times the score by just defending, and it's like that's it. There's a lot of this is the way the game is set up is there's a lot of all or nothings in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of risk of ending your turn prematurely just for the sake of you rolling 2 die, hoping to get an extra +1 to an attack. So I'm really starting to see that the way to win this game, if you were just boring about it, would be to risk very little.
Aye, 1 roll all the time for quality.
Yeah.
And ganging up. Like, if you want to... And probably, as well, you're relying on, like, yeah, ganging up and getting people to flee off the table as well.
Yeah, the risk versus reward from the things that you do are, like, it's really stacked against you. So I think you really have to hope that the other person goes big and then subsequently goes home.
Final thoughts. We play Rangers of Shadowdeep a lot. How would you compare the two? I mean, they're very, very different games, but, like, is there anything that stands out to you that Shadowdeep doesn't have, or vice versa?
Yeah, definitely. The way that you wear people down in Rangers of Shadowdeep and then can kill them, it is, I guess it's much more aligned to every other experience I've had in gaming. Whereas this, it's all like you can't really kill them unless it's a very specific scenario. Like, either really weighted in the dice rolls, or you've ganged up and there's 3 of them, which is possibly more realistic to real life, if you like. But I think that means you've got fewer strategies that you can employ. Whereas you've got a bit more freedom and a bit more artistic license in Rangers of Shadowdeep, because you do have health and you might go big, but then not quite die from it, but then your health has gone from 10 to 3, so then you're a lot more cautious for the rest of the game, whereas it's on the flip of a coin all the time, no matter what, for these characters.
Yeah, it's like the trade-off of the no bookkeeping. Like, if you're keeping track of health, on the one hand, that is a pain, and it's something you can lapse and get wrong or forget or get muddled up about. The trade-off of not having that here is it then becomes like it's almost like you're starting afresh every turn. Like, I know you knock people down and that's an advantage, but...
For me, I don't think the gain that you get from having less admin in this is worth it, because I do have to keep track of who's moved and all that. So if I'm already doing that anyway, then it's not much more for me to then keep track of their health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, yeah.
I sound very bitter because I got absolutely trounced, but yeah.
No, I think it was extreme dice rolling. Like, I've never rolled as well as that, and I doubt you've rolled as badly as that before. And even then, you still did remove more models for the table than I did to you. So I guess that's a sort of victory on your part.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to see how that then pans out. I bet if you did simulations with, computer simulations that worked on averages, I wonder how different it would look. Probably not that different. On average, who would win more often or whatever. It would be interesting to see how that played out.
Anything you would have done differently in the deployment or just general tactics?
Yeah,
start to roll more sixes.
Stuff that would basically exploit the way the rules are set out, where the faster moving ones, I would probably have more in the middle so they don't leave the table. I'd probably have put Beaky Blinder on the flank more, because all he would have to do is rush up to someone, get a win, and then suddenly all your guys that are on the edge are scattering off the table. But that kind of feels like an exploit that you would do in a video game, you know, like in Golden Axe when you deliberately get the skeletons to walk off and walk off the platform and fall down.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not really what the game's meant to be.
No, it's not a game of chess, that's the thing.
Other than that, just having people walk around in packs like gangs, which I guess is more realistic.
Yeah, aye, definitely.
This isn't really Star Wars, you know, with the two Jedi having a fencing match. This just sticking together as an army and killing folk.
Cool. Well, that's about all there is to say, I guess, unless I've overlooked anything.
Your big man never had to lift a finger.
No, he was just very much a spectator, wasn't he? I've still got four Chaos Warriors on the hill there. They were just watching too. They literally had the popcorn out, so...
Doing nothing. They're probably playing The Sims or something, you know.
Like, yeah.
We're playing a fantasy game, they're playing modern civilization.
So, props to your survivors, Adam with the apple, who is lying down, but he survived, Russell Sprout, Stew Pot, Rick with the stick, Rocky, he's standing as well, which is uncommon, Harold, Orla, Gunter, Paul with the ball, and Bare Knuckle Bob. That's not bad. So how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So I did say if I got 9, nine dead, I've not managed that. So to be honest,
heavens,
probably the moral victory for you, even though it was a disaster and probably no fun to play.
It was hard going, come on. And it's so frustrating as well when it's like, it's just pure chance. It's just rolls. You can't account for that, you know? The one thing I would say about this game is that you've got your Rocky there with the quality 4 and the combat of 4. That extra 1 in combat that he gets is absolutely, it's almost useless, because that quality 4 just outweighs it completely.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to roll 2 die, because you know you're going to hand the dice over to the other person. You're going to hand the turn over. And that plus 1 in combat is like almost useless compared to the fact that he only ever activate once. You'll be lucky if you get a swing. He spent more time getting up. I think he only attacked once. And same with Russell Sprout. What's his combat? Was like 1 or 0?
I think it's 1.
And his quality was 4?
3.
Well, it's 3. So, yeah, with him being a magic user, but that's just basically ranged. He's like Orla, but instead of a combat 4, he's combat 1. So he was useless, basically. Because even if he did succeed in activating combat 1, and I'm hoping you're rolling like a 2 or a 1, which I don't think he ever did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I got that hat trick of ones, but then I thought that was funny. But then you followed up. I think you maybe rolled 6 ones in a row, which is just
5 ones in a row. I think it was. Yeah, not all in the one roll, but like one after the other.
Yeah.
So yeah, anything you could do badly, I can do worse.
The big guy, interestingly, just looking at his stats, he never got involved, but quality too. So you almost can't fail to activate him. He's long move, so he could get anywhere. Like, he's probably not going to fail any activation. So you'll have three. He could be anywhere in one turn. And I think even to fight him, you need to pass a morale test, you know, because you just want to run away instead. And then he'll get a free hit on you and he'll win. Right. So he wasn't involved at all. He was there. He was there for moral support, but
yeah,
unbeatable, basically.
The quality does seem to be much more important than the combat, almost. Like,
yeah, I would agree.
I'd rather have a combat two than a quality two than a combat four.
And it's funny that, because it's one, like, you look at when you get combat four instead of three, you think, oh, it's just one. But when you're looking at quality three versus quality four, it's just one as well. But that seems a lot more intimidating.
Yeah, because you're risking losing the turns of up to 18 of your other models.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no. Whereas if quality two, you'd be like, right, I'm rolling all three dice. I can almost certainly not lose, and then stomp everybody.
Ah, well, back to the Shadow Deep next time around, I guess. And what'll it be now? Just thinking of Goatsy. So Goatsy's dead. Son of Goatsy's dead. Grandson of Goatsy's dead. Great-great-grandson of Goatsy. Are we going to bring him in for his death?
Greatsy. Yeah, definitely.
Good stuff. Well, thanks very much, Robert. I know it wasn't much fun for you, but...
That was good stuff.
It was fun enough for me, so...
Well, I remember this. You had the big Rocky chap once, and it was the same for you. He did bugger all because he was just getting up all the time. So, you know, turnabout's fair play.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. And you'll find pictures of the game we played today over at the website, bedroombattlefields.com.